The Information's 411 is brought to you by Brex, the company that's reimagining financial systems to power the next generation of business. Check them out at brex.com/the information. If you have an iPhone, you probably noticed that most every app you've used in the last few months has asked you for permission to track your behavior on other apps. That notice has sent shockwaves throughout the tech industry, among companies that sell ads for a living, and, of course, impacted the millions of merchants and consumer packaged goods companies like Unilever and Hershey's, whose businesses depend in part on advertising their wares to consumers on phones. This year's The Information 50, our list of the most promising under-the-radar startups across several categories, including commerce, yielded at least two companies that have made it part of their mission to get merchants out of this hole. Malik Morris, our resident commerce expert, joins us to walk through some of his deeply reported selections for this list, and he answers our questions about the supply chain problems impacting online retail. He also tells us, where are all those live shopping apps that we were promised a year ago? Malik then talks to Rachel Tipograph, CEO and founder of the top commerce startup on our list, Micmac, which is a pick that, frankly, none of us saw coming. Welcome to a special edition of the Information's 411 podcast. My name is Amir Efrati, executive editor at The Information. All right, welcome, Malik. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about some of the choices that you made for the TI50 commerce list. One of the big themes this year was Apple and what Apple did, which impacted every advertising-related company on Earth. And I think that really played into some of the choices you made for this list.
Yeah. So what's been happening with Apple's, earlier this year, they, with their iOS 14 update, they're now letting users, obviously iPhone users, ask apps not to track them. So if I see an ad, if I'm in an app or, you know, if I'm on a website, the whole, it'll show me an ad for a brand that I might have searched for, or, you know, for a brand that carries goods that I might have, you know, come across and, you know, clicked on or what have you. And now that's gone away. So specifically for online commerce and, you know, direct-to-consumer brand, it's become a huge issue because the name of the game for these entities is growing their customer base through advertising on Facebook and Google. And so that definitely informed the companies that I wanted to include in TI50, specifically Micmac and Cord Commerce. Both of them are software enablement firms. And a key feature for both companies is that they allow the brands they work with to track customer activity through the software they power. So for Cord Commerce, there's essentially like a smaller Shopify. So they can power your website where you sell your goods. But a feature they have within that is me, Malik, shopping on brand X, you know, from as soon as I enter the site, I'm being tracked. So for the things that I look at, like let's say I'm looking at, you know, watches, and I click on a certain watch and I click out of it, but I don't add it to the cart, right? But then I see something else and I add that to the cart and I go to check out. Before I check out, it might suggest suggested items. You might want to check out this watch as well. Or I can check out and then, you know, I get a confirmation and then for my order. And then a week later, I get an email saying, or a text message saying, oh, that watch that you were looking at is actually on sale now. So that's really important to try to get me to come back to the platform, because they can't count on like five more Maliks coming to the site to buy more. They can count on me coming to buy five more things. And that's how Cord Commerce plays into that. And then Micmac, what they do is they work specifically with like consumer packaged goods brands. And for that, those brands don't necessarily have like a landing page site where you can do, where you can shop directly with them. They sell through like, you know, Walmart, Amazon, Target, what have you. And so Micmac does something that's really quite interesting, and is for a CPG brand like Hershey's or Colgate, their digital ads. If I, as a customer, am interacting with a digital ad, it gives me a chance to buy what I'm seeing. and I can click on that, and I can be redirected to whichever site it's being sold on. And my activity to either completing the transaction or just being on the site is being tracked through Micmac's software. So now if that brand wants to target an ad to me again to say, hey, you didn't buy that thing, now it's on sale, or you bought that thing, but you're looking at something else and you might want to buy this as well, they're able to do that. So it's a different sort of customer value, where it's not necessarily just trying to reach out to any and everyone to get 5,000 people to buy one thing. It's trying to get the 50 people who have shopped with you to buy like 500 more things.
Now, I was really surprised by that pick, especially Micmac, because there's so many ad tech companies. And I guess one of the reasons for their traction in this field that you just described, and you're going to be talking to their founder, Rachel, in a few minutes, is that they themselves were a kind of direct-to-consumer live shopping app as of a few years ago, and then pivoted when they sort of saw this other opportunity, and their live shopping app didn't take off, which does raise the question of what's going on with live shopping apps, which is also an area that you looked at earlier this year.
Obviously, we've seen a boom of live shopping now, specifically in the U.S., trying to mirror what's happening in China. But the question is the U.S. consumer going to adopt this way of shopping at the same clip that a Chinese consumer is? And that has yet to be seen. I do think that a lot of these companies are courting Gen Z consumers, that is consumers that are under the age of 30. And it makes sense because now customers are expecting to have like a TikTok-like experience when they're shopping. It's commerce meeting entertainment, entertainment meeting commerce. But a lot of those companies are also pulling on the lever of QVC and HSN as, you know, having grown to be billion-dollar businesses, engaging people through video commerce. But I would say that it's yet to be seen how big this market can be here and if customers largely are actually adopting that way of shopping.
That's why, even though we've written about a lot of these companies, and you have specifically, you didn't include any of them on this list.
Right.
I wanted to talk about Drop Party, which was another one of your picks. Really quite compelling idea. It's a young company, I think two years old, all about helping kind of various types of could be celebrities or brands to actually produce branded merchandise and be able to sell it, whether you're a NFL quarterback or whether you are part of a you know, TV show and you want to kind of sell merchandise around that. This was a pick that I think obviously intersects with kind of creator economy type ideas as well. And I was a little surprised just because it's a very young company that has not demonstrated a lot of revenue yet. So I'd love to know a little bit more about why you picked this company and what you see in this one.
Right. So I actually worked on this one with with our incredibly adept colleague, Mark DiStefano, who hails from our London Bureau, who worked on the list with me. And so Drop Party is really interesting. So one of the biggest trends in consumer-facing commerce in the past 5 years has been the idea of drops. You saw it with the rise of Supreme and, you know, the constant re-releasing of styles from Nike's popular Air Jordan collection. And, you know, another trend concomitantly is the rise of merchandise. And we saw this with like Kanye West 2016 with Life of Pablo, and now with the resurgence of concert tees and hoodies for iconic bands like The Grateful Dead and others. And Drop Party is building a business off these two trends by facilitating the production, distribution, and selling of fan merchandise. So like tees and hoodies from, you know, with graphics from popular albums and movies, artist tours, or things of that nature. And young consumers are all in on the idea of buying into hype. And a big part of hype for brands is making a limited amount of desirable goods that have enormous demand and will sell out quickly. And like another company that we included called The Yes, Drop Party is addressing the way that the youth are shopping right now by giving them a central place to do so. How big the company can be or where it can scale obviously remains to be seen, but there is a lot of energy around within consumer culture for this type of business model with limited edition merchandise to be sold at a specific time and engaging a specific sort of customer, specifically those that are locked into fandoms. That's a multi-billion dollar industry. Like, there's a lot of commerce behind that. And you're seeing that also with the rise of companies like a StockX or a GOAT. It's like really creating a community of people who are going to be loyal and that are going to be repeat customers and are going to actually rope in more people who are like-minded to engage with the platform as well.
Although at this point, we should talk a little bit about the supply chain and logistics issues that are impacting all of commerce, and you just wrote about recently for The Information. So it seems like Drop Party perhaps might be a little bit more shielded, given that it's all about limited edition and really the scarcity factor. What's your sense of the way that the challenges in supply chain these days are going to impact these picks?
So that's actually really interesting. So the thing about the Yes is they're essentially just a commerce, they're not commerce enablement, but they're essentially a facilitator of transactions. They don't hold any inventory. So they have a bevy of brands, and maybe some of those brands may run into supply chain issues, obviously with the making of goods, you know, shortage of materials or the importing of goods with everything that's happening at, you know, ports, specifically in Los Angeles and in Long Beach. But that may not be the case. So they may not be as impacted, because if, you know, brand X is having these issues, they have like 30 other brands that are not having these issues that, you know, have ample inventory.
I see. So they're maybe diversified enough.
Right.
Well, last question I had for you is kind of related to Cord Commerce, which you picked, and specifically around the question about what types of services retailers or merchants need these days. And it's just interesting to see a company that so clearly positions itself as an alternative to Shopify, which has been this incredible just juggernaut, right, as an alternative itself to Amazon. So just curious to get a sense from you of how much room there is for, you know, business model innovation in terms of helping merchants, and what are areas where maybe Shopify is taking too big of a cut as a gatekeeper, and other startups, including Cord, are exploiting well.
Yeah, so it's obviously multi-pronged. So I think the first thing is a shift from Amazon to Shopify, right? And a lot of that is, you know, really small merchants realizing that being on Amazon, while giving them great exposure, could also give them great competition in ways that they're not anticipating. And so Shopify has emerged as this solution for them to go straight to their consumers. It's allowed the smallest person, you know, selling pens online to become a direct-to-consumer brand. And being a merchant on Shopify, you kind of need to use their checkout software to transact. But if you want to use someone else, you actually have to pay a fee that's a little higher. So it locks in a great stream of revenue for Shopify. And if I'm a small merchant selling pens, it doesn't really matter, you know, if I'm paying 2% or 5% on, you know, a $5 product. But that obviously, as you grow in revenue, the chunk becomes much bigger. And another important piece of that is that Cord is really courting like these direct-to-consumer brands. So think of like the Warby Parkers or the Allbirds of the world. The brands that are emerging that are of that type, that are selling directly to their customers. And that's a really important piece of what's so exciting about this company and why investors are excited about this company. And even the, you know, brands within the ecosystem are excited about them as well, is because it was founded by two of the former executives of Glossier, one of the biggest and most successful D2C brands in the past 10 years. And the CEO of Cord Commerce was the CTO of Glossier. And so he built their entire tech stack. He built all the software capability they needed to get online, sell online at the capacity that they did, was all him. And if anyone knows the pain points, if anyone knows the layering requirements, if anyone knows how to build an online brand successfully and at a fast rate, it's him.
Well, Malik, thank you for taking us to commerce school. We could go on for quite a while. And so we'll have to have you back to talk more. And everyone should check out your TI50 commerce list. When we come back, you're actually going to talk to Rachel Tipograph, the CEO and founder of Micmac, which is not a pick that I expected to see, and intrigued to hear your conversation with her. So thanks very much, and we'll see you in a minute. Today's episode is brought to you by Brex, the company that's reimagining financial systems to power the next generation of business. Brex knows that leaders and finance teams have heard it all. Disrupt the industry, banish mediocrity, dominate e-commerce. Well, Brex also knows that to do any of that, you first need a superior corporate card, one with 10 to 20 times higher credit limits, no personal guarantee, and built-in spend controls and expense tracking. Apply online at brex.com/theinformation, and you'll get up to 50,000 rewards points. That's brex.com/theinformation.
Hi, Rachel. How are you today?
I'm doing well. So great to be here with you.
Great to be here with you as well. Thank you for agreeing to chat with me again.
Always.
So as we've selected Micmac for TI50 for a great reason, but I was wondering if we can back up and kind of go a little bit to the origin of this. I have a bit of a fun question here. If you can tell me the origin story of Micmac in 30 seconds or less.
Sure. I was leading global digital and social media at Gap. I saw in my mind the death of darling direct-to-consumer brands, and I felt everyone was going to end up in the shelves of Amazon, Target, Walmart. So I decided to quit my job to build software that allows brands to drive sales at their biggest retailers with D2C-like principles.
That's great. And I understand Micmac was originally endeavoring in video shopping from 2015, I think, until 2017. Why did you pivot Micmac from being essentially a social commerce platform, which is emerging really well right now, to an e-commerce software company?
Well, I edited that out of my 30-second answer. So I quit my job at Gap in the spring of 2014. And if you remember the digital ecosystem then, everyone was building iPhone apps and raising money from venture capitalists. So I thought that's what I was supposed to do. So I took my vision for the future of media and commerce, which is all about distributed commerce, and I shoved it into an iPhone app so I could raise money. And the first version of Micmac, I essentially was TikTok before TikTok existed. I had comedians hawking products through vertical video. Everything I sold was below $100, no sizes. I'd sold knickknacks. That's where the name came from. And I ran that business for about a year and a half. And honestly, we were just ahead of our time. And I had 50,000 daily active users buying products through vertical video, which was kind of cool, but also not really a big deal. I needed the scale of eBay to build a B2C business that people would care about, meaning I needed at least 150 million daily active users. And the world wasn't ready for that yet. That was 2014-15. So I decided to move the business to an enterprise software company because I was selling brands like L'Oreal and Bose and Lego through the app. And these brands were calling me and they were like, Rachel, this magical universe that you created for yourself, can we actually license that at L'Oreal? And when the biggest brands are saying this to you, you start to pay attention. And I essentially picked up the phone. I called 300 brands and I asked them a simple question. Why can't you build this yourself? And what I heard back were pain points around user experience for e-com, creative for e-com, and attribution. And that those three pain points were even more exacerbated when you talk to companies where the majority of their sales came from major e-retailers like Amazon, Target, Walmart, because they don't own their customer. The retailer does. And that's when I go, whoa, there is a really big software opportunity here with brands that have deep pockets that I think I could actually build a really big business in this space. And that's when I did the hardest thing at the time in my career, and I moved the business from an iPhone app to an enterprise software company, And then the entire business just took off like a rocket ship.
So you're actually touching on something else that I wanted to get into. Obviously, you know, Micmac works with different types of consumer brands. But you all do have a keen interest in serving consumer packaged goods brands like, you know, Hershey's and Colgate. Why has Micmac chosen to focus so intently on CPG brands?
Yeah, because they're experiencing the biggest amount of pain. These are brands where at least 90% of their revenue comes from major retailers. And D2C is always just going to be a pimple in their business because they've honestly cannibalized that opportunity through just like 100 years of being in business and being available at mass retail. And so that was like number one, just realizing like they were really feeling that pain of owning no customer data and never knowing if, you know, their digital or social marketing was working and what was the relationship between those investments and the bottom line at major retailers. The second, and this has been a strategy that's worked for me my entire career, I like to do things in unsexy categories because I believe that essentially I can be a big fish in a small pond and that these industries will eventually need to be revolutionized by technology, which means that it will only go up and to the right. And so when I started this software, the enterprise version of the software I brought to market in the beginning of 2017, if you looked at the P&L of CPG brands in grocery and alcohol and personal care and OTC, pet, gardening, et cetera, e-commerce was less than 3% of their total sales. Obviously, it was only going to go up. And you want to build a business in categories that are going to have positive market tailwinds. It's worked for me my entire career. And essentially, you know, I built this product that was ahead of the market. And then the market arrived on our lap in the beginning of 2020 when the pandemic struck, which is a weird thing to talk about because of the change in the customer journey.
Yeah, you're hitting on something else that I find really interesting. Obviously, there have been e-commerce tailwinds. It took off last year as the physical world shut down. This year, people are returning to the office, in-person events, and physical retail. How has this shift kind of back to normalcy affected Micmac's growth?
It's only continued. So we've doubled the business year over year. So 100% year over year growth since I brought the software to market in the beginning of 2017. It's been crazy. And it hasn't slowed down, even as we, air quotes, return back to a normal world. It takes 21 days to build a habit. The world has discovered that life is much simpler when they buy their groceries and alcohol online. And that consumer behavior is here to stay.
And as you've grown in the past year, you know, what challenges have you all faced and how are you all addressing those challenges?
You know, the challenges that we've faced, I think, are no different than other businesses. There is no playbook to build a high growth company in this virtual world that we live in. I now have employees in 24 states and 2 countries. The majority of my team has never met a Micmacer in real life because they were hired during the pandemic. And so just from a people management, change management, culture, all against the backdrop of a pandemic and a continued social justice crisis, you know, a change in a president, like it's a lot. And that for me is the real challenge of the job. It's not the industry that I operate in or e-commerce or, you know, cookieless internet. It's people management.
Right. And you mentioned now cookieless internet. That's another podcast
to dive into that.
But I did want to step back a little bit and because I'm a little bit of a nerd about some of this. Like, how does your software help brands you work with? Like, what does your software actually do? Like, what does it enable your brands to do?
Yeah. So Micmac, we're a SaaS platform, and we provide CPG brands with e-commerce enablement and analytics software. And so what it allows a CPG brand to do is literally see that end-to-end customer journey across every major media channel. So Facebook, TikTok, Pinterest, paid search, streaming video, your brand website, all the way down to basket level sales data at places like Amazon, Target, Walmart. The way that we capture this data is via something that we call Micmac Commerce, which listeners, maybe you've experienced as a consumer. If you've been in an environment like Instagram or TikTok and you've been given the power to choose Amazon, Target, Walmart, Ulta, Sephora, Drizzly Minibar, Instacart, Tripped. That's us behind the scenes powering it. So that's how we're capturing all this data.
Which is incredibly important in this climate right now of brands trying to reach their consumers and target to them. Now, fun question. What is on the horizon for Micmac in the next 5 years or so? The infamous, what do you see yourself in 5 years?
Yeah. So what I like to tell people is at Micmac, we believe that the E will be dropped from e-commerce. It will just be commerce. The consumer does not care where they will start, stop, and finish their journey, which means that measurement needs to catch up with the consumer. And so Micmac's vision is to really be the de facto omni-channel commerce intelligence enablement platform for CPG brands, which means in the hopefully near future, we're actually going to be able to prove digitally influenced offline sales. And so that should give folks an idea of where we're heading. But in more of the immediate future, we have really big goals around international expansion. So we've moved people to Europe. We now have a retail network across EMEA, APAC, LATAM. So that's a big area of focus. We also are going to start working more with media publishers as well as the retail media groups as actual customers of Micmac, which is super exciting. And then today we cater to Fortune 1000 brands. There's a ton of CPG brands out there that are more like mid-market small businesses that are making a name for themselves at places like Target and Walmart. And we want to be able to work with them too. So we're actually bringing to market a product to cater to smaller companies as well.
That's exciting. You mentioned omnichannel, which is, I'm a nerd for that. But if you can break that down just a little bit quickly of what omnichannel actually is for the listeners who may not be aware of that word.
Yeah, so it's shop wherever you want to shop. You want to buy online, pick up in store. You want to buy online, get it to your house, delivered in 15 minutes. You want to see an ad on Instagram and then walk into a physical store in Soho. That's the omnichannel experience. It's shopping 360 degrees, digital, physical world.
Love it. What is one standout e-commerce trend that is going to dominate, you think, in the next year?
The relationship between OTT, like watching something on your Roku TV, and shopping. I'm extremely bullish on OTT and commerce. And the reason why is that it's the power of television psychologically with that targeting of bottom of the funnel, direct response advertising. And I truly think it's a very, very powerful medium for commerce.
Wow. I would love to talk to you for another like 2 hours about that just specifically, but I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. Very excited about Micmac, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this week. Thank you to Malik Morris and Rachel Tipograph for joining us. This episode was produced by Spoke Media. From Spoke, producer Cody Hoffmachel, coordinating producer Alicia Force, mixing and mastering engineer Will Short, associate producer Lucy Wong, and executive producer Keith Reynolds. From The Information, Anne Marinovich and Becky Eventash. I'm Amir Efradi. Have a great weekend, everyone.